at Raytheon as an electrical engineer. And my daughter's a reference librarian, if you know what that is. Anyway, let's see what we got here. I think it's open. You know what? How about if I do this? Can't you see the headline? Man electrocuted in front of an audience in Aurora. Okay, why don't we start there? It's actually going to work. Thank you. Anyway, one thing about homeschooling. Many people, including my wife and I, had the question, well, what happens? How do they get wood chopped? Who's going to teach them physics? Who's going to do this and that? And I had those same concerns. And I'm here to tell you that when that needed to happen, the Lord provided the people to do that. So my daughter plays a musical instrument. She actually can hold a conversation with adults. But in addition, they learned physics and all these things. And both of them ended up going to junior college at 16. Something to shoot for. I'll say excuse me once. We're ready. Let's do this. Am I in anyone's way here? These broad shoulders. Okay, there's some additional resources that I brought for today. Here's an article called Rock Stars Support Creation. This was written for high schoolers. And here's the question that I try to answer in that. How come, if the Earth is billions of years old, and we know that more than 150 meteorites strike the Earth every year, why aren't there any meteorites in these layered rocks? Wouldn't you expect, assuming using evolutionist thinking, you would expect to sometimes find them in coal or whatever. They don't. We only find them on the surface. What does that tell you? And then the next one, I went to evolutionists and creationists and asked them, what do you believe? And I made a list that kind of juxtaposes this one for evolution, this one for creation, juxtaposes against each other. You believe the Earth is old, you believe the Earth is young. Not every evolutionist believes all the things on the evolution list, most of them do. Not every creationist believes all the things on the creation list. But what I did is, once I made this list, I went back to the evolutionists, I went back to the creationists, and said, can you live with this? And so they changed it and tweaked it and whatever, and I printed it just like that. So something for you to think about when you're studying some of this stuff. Okay, Mount St. Helens, Portrait of a Catastrophe. I happened to be teaching at that time, and some of you probably were not here at that time. But in the Cascade Mountains, there's a series of mountains like at Mount Adams and Mount Rainier and Mount Rushmore and all of them. No, excuse me. And you know, all these others. And one of them is Mount St. Helens. And it's an old volcano that had historically erupted 127 years before 1980. Now, how do these compare with one another? The some of the known ones, now these are prehistoric, meaning we can take measurements with cores just to see how large the lava volume is and where. Imagine Yellowstone had an eruption that was 600 cubic miles. Then all these others were pretty good size eruptions as well. And you're probably aware that Yellowstone National Park is on a super volcano, so it might be interesting, unless you're on vacation there. Krakatoa, one of the more famous, killed 36,000 people, and tidal waves, and you name it. So then, last but certainly one of the least is Mount St. Helens. Now, why are we talking about this teeny volcano, when I could be talking about all these other things? The thing about Mount St. Helens is that everyone knew from the day it erupted, in fact, prior to it erupting, we could watch day by day and hour by hour as the geology changed and was formed at Mount St. Helens. So it's one of these unique things that you get to see and was recorded by professional geologists and other scientists during, before, during, and after. Now, prior to May 18th, 1980, Mount St. Helens was a beautiful place to go to. And there's boating, canoeing, that kind of stuff, sailboats, camping, fishing, hunting, you name it, is a beautiful place to go. And any time of the year, like even in fall and other times, and it was surrounded by a huge old-growth forest, pines and 13 other or 12 other species. Now, Mount St. Helens erupted in the past, and we've taken cores of it. And it happens to be what's called a stratovolcano, meaning strata means layers. So this volcano is building up and leaving these layers as the lava slides down the slope. What made Mount St. Helens different in this last eruption in 1980, it didn't bring a lot of lava out. It actually exploded sideways, and we'll show you the difference there. If you watch volcanoes on TV and they show you ones from Hawaii, that you can see lava and things flowing around, and they're usually not real disastrous as far as you can get out of the way of them. Mount St. Helens was an incredible disaster. Anyway, here's before, here's if you're hovering over in a helicopter or whatever, you'd see Mount St. Helens there at 9,677 feet. You would see these different small lakes and things like that. And then because I'm going to show you some pictures from Bear Meadow, it's 10 miles away. And I'll show you some other pictures. So kind of get the idea of how these things all go together. And then State Route 504 ran along all the way up to the timberline. And timberline means that's where the trees can't grow for whatever biological reason. But that's what it looked like before. And there was a gift shop and souvenir shop, and right there on the southwest corner of Spirit Lake. So notice it's at the base of Mount St. Helens. Maybe not a good idea to do, but who knows? It hadn't erupted in 127 years. Excuse me. By the way, haven't you ever wondered, this maybe sounds weird, but I've always wanted to be in an earthquake, a tornado, a hurricane, if I knew I wouldn't get hurt. I mean, isn't that kind of interesting to think about anyway? Anyway, here's this. And the blast on May 18th, 1980, blew out a half cubic mile of material. It was blasted right off the top. So it lost hundreds of feet in seconds. And 1/8 of a cubic mile of material slid into Spirit Lake, creating a wave up the sides of that valley 860 feet. So when we studied it, you could actually see at the time evidence of the lake was actually washed out, creating a wave of 860 feet. The initial blast was 22 million tons of TNT, and the eruption on May 18th, it lasted 9 hours and released the equivalent of one Hiroshima atomic bomb per second. Now, if you're younger, you might not know what Hiroshima was, but we bombed Hiroshima near the end of World War II, and it destroyed the entire city. Well, imagine that amount of power coming out of there every second for 9 hours. The slurry of mud and ash, called a pyroclastic flow, raced down into Spirit Lake and beyond at more than 100 miles an hour. And the temperature was 550 degrees Fahrenheit, all the way up to nearby, it was maybe 800 degrees Fahrenheit. So if you were in the way of this, it might hurt a little bit. So during the eruption, here's what was going on. The mountain exploded sideways so that the stream and mud was directed along the ground. So you have, instead of blowing up like a lot of volcanoes, it went this way, down into Spirit Lake, covering 250 square miles of damage. And 300 feet of debris accumulated on the bottom of Spirit Lake and raised the elevation 200 feet. In other words, the new elevation of the surface of Mount St. Helens is 200 feet. How can that be if you dump 300 feet of stuff in there? It's much bigger, the area of Spirit Lake, and I'll show you in a moment. But it grew greatly, and the surface of the lake, as I said, was elevated by 200 feet. Now, there's the old Spirit Lake in the dotted lines. That's where it used to be. And the picture underneath it is where it is now. And then, unfortunately, that's where the lodge that sold souvenirs and things like that was. It is now under several hundred feet of debris from Spirit Lake. And we'll talk about why that was significant to the person who lived there. Okay, all around here, new river systems and things completely changed. And you'll notice on here there isn't a Highway 504 at the moment, but all the topography around there changed dramatically, and suddenly there were new lakes appearing because things had dips in them and would collect water, etc. And a 1 mile thick drainage tunnel was cut through solid rock from Spirit Lake over to here, the Coldwater Creek, because the lake would have topped itself and even made greater destruction than that. So they built this thing, Army Corps of Engineers, to actually save some of the area around there. Now, the explosion was so immense that after the eruption, new rivers formed, and in fact, new islands formed from rocks that were so big that were thrown out of there that they didn't even all sink to the bottom of the different water things that they have there. And this is an island you can see, huge below the surface. How much power would it take to blow a rock, you know, maybe hundreds and hundreds of tons a mile or two? Pretty big deal. And this is an island that remains that landed there in 1980. Now, if you go to places where there are glaciers, the docent there will talk about how you can tell a glacier's been there because there are these grooves. And as the glacier slowly retreated, the rocks in the glacier ground those grooves in there. In this case, these grooves at Mount St. Helens were ground by these huge rocks that were running down this mountain at over 100 miles an hour. And I'm not saying every time someone tells you this is a glacier, see the grooves in the rock. But as you'll see throughout this presentation, a lot of things that we take for granted, and you'll be learning in school, and someone will point out something to you, and maybe they're right and maybe they're not. It's time to look at some of these areas that have suspicious grooves in them, and maybe they weren't caused by glaciers. They might have been caused in a matter of seconds by a huge volcanic eruption. Now, on Spirit Lake, notice it's bigger now, there 1 million trees were deposited on Spirit Lake. And there's a floating log mat, which we're going to talk about later, and how significant it is explaining things that we know, that we see in Yellowstone National Park. So on the 27th of 1980, Mount St. Helens awakens for the first time in 127 years. By the way, there's an average of 2,000 earthquakes a year in the Cascades. They're usually, you can't notice them, but if you have the equipment, you can see that they are. So this was in March, and it was a pretty good-sized earthquake, and it opened up this hole. Now, you'll see the next shots, all this will be black. That's because the snow, which is millions of gallons of frozen water, is covered with ash. So as you see these things change, there's still millions of gallons of water underneath it. Now, this gives you some idea of that crag that opened up in relation to a plane that's flying over it. On the 29th, a couple days later, another earthquake hit Mount St. Helens, and it put a second hole in it. And then finally, in March 30th, 1980, the volcano came alive and started blowing a lot of smoke and all kinds of stuff like that, ash and things. No eruption yet. But people would come from miles around, if you lived around there. After church today, let's go over and look at Mount St. Helens. It's kind of cool, and it's blowing all this stuff. And this is in Bear Meadow, 10 miles away. And it was very common around there that people would congregate and actually watch the volcano. I think it'd be pretty interesting. Now, scientists knew that something big was going to happen, because there was a bulge rising on the face of Mount St. Helens that was rising at 3 feet per day for many, many days. In fact, some of the days it rose 5 or more feet. And here is the day before the eruption. This bulge has weakened the whole side of that thing. And all of a sudden, on Sunday morning, Keith and Dorothy Stoffel, who are both geologists, and I'm guessing they must have went to the early service, being Sunday and everything, they were flying over Mount St. Helens. And as they were flying over, a huge earthquake, 5.1 earthquake, hit Mount St. Helens, and they literally were right, they were right over this when they saw these half a cubic mile of material come sliding down on Mount St. Helens, and they were right above it. And they were wondering, we could probably be killed. I mean, this all happens in moments. But they were in the right spot at the right time. You can see their tail of their small airplane, right as the thing completely blew, giving them a bird's eye view. Imagine being a geologist, seeing a geologic event happen before your very eyes. There was a lady who was back here when I went out there in 91. I met one of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife people, and she was on the backside of Mount St. Helens when it blew, only because the person that she was supposed to do a bio survey was sick that day, so she decided to go on the other side. What is interesting, and she volunteered this to me, she became a Christian after that. And she did say it definitely played a part in my salvation, because I knew that I should have been right in the front of that. Now, here we are from Bear Meadows, 10 miles away, and these trees that you see are hundreds of feet tall. They're not little tiny trees. They're big pines. And here's what's going on at the same time. The most famous picture was in National Geographic's, where this guy was standing on Mount Adams, another Cascade Mountain. And the explosion, actually the wave, knocked him on his butt. Here's what was going on then. There's a plug of magma underneath Mount St. Helens, but this area here was weakening. And so if you take a little time lapse of what happened, this material sloughs off, and then suddenly it is free, and you get this tremendous blast out of two holes, which quickly turn into one. And so here's, from another vantage point, a guy by the name of Gary Rosenquist, I'll mention him in a second. Wouldn't that be cool to see that? And the question is, how loud was it? Did people go deaf? And I talked to people around there, because I didn't believe it at first. They said, we didn't hear anything. I said, what? Well, they looked into it, and the explosion went so fast, it was beyond the sound barrier. You know what I mean? So people heard it about 100 miles away from there, but if you were around there, it actually was carried away by the blast, and people said it was relatively quiet. And here we go. There's the two holes exploding. And there they are together. And these things that look like little rockets are those gigantic boulders that formed some of the islands in the new waterways. And someone took a movie of it. So we can watch this in real time, what's going on. It lost 1,300 feet in height in 8 seconds. And here it is. If you look up Mount St. Helens on YouTube or some of those, you can get some of these. I got this, I think, from a friend. Anyway, Keith Ronholm was several peaks over, and he didn't expect this eruption at all. And all of a sudden, this thing happens, and he sees it rushing at him at over 100 miles an hour. And he thought, well, I'll take as many pictures as I can, and I'm a dead man anyway, so I hope they find my camera. Well, it turns out that this pyroclastic blast of ash bounced off the ridge that he was on 20 feet overhead. So this is, as it passed him by, he actually survived. He had all kinds of little debris and rocks and things like that land on him, but he actually lived through it. So he could actually tell you what happened. And then this is kind of what it looked like for a while, that it would release different times. It also erupted several other times. So if you look at a satellite view, this is 43 minutes after the initial explosion. Mount St. Helens blew a gigantic smoke ring. And coming around about an hour half later, you can see that the dust went up into Washington, into Canada, over to Idaho, all these different places. And in fact, there were traces of the dust within a few days, even above Texas there. And Spokane, and some of the red ones were 2 to 5 inches. But this is a picture of Yakima, Washington at noon. Now remember, that's May 18th, 1980. So it's May 18th. It wasn't a big snowstorm or whatever. This is a photograph of what the sky looked like in Yakima, Washington, almost 100 miles away. And people had to go do this. I'm going to climb up on